Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Meeting Pros.
Welcome to this week's episode of Meeting Pros. I'm Michael Lauer. We've got a very special guest lined up for you. First up today, we have with us David Schenberg with Busy Event Mobile. How are you doing, David?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Did I pronounce that last name right? I kind of just took a stab at it.
No, you did great.
Good deal. So you, before we get into what your role is with Busy Event Mobile, maybe you could give us a little bit of mission and purpose for your company.
So Busy Event Mobile is a fourth generation technology. We started Busy Event as a company back in 2006 to attempt to automate a lot of the different pieces of software that were going on in and around the event space. And we actually had a little plastic device called a Belinker back in the day. People would wear it with their badges and use it to do what was called event bookmarking, which collected a bunch of stuff to a virtual page, a virtual tote bag. And that eventually became mobile phone enabled, as we expected it would. And we've now just recently embarked on that fourth generation mobile product, Busy Event Mobile, which is essentially an app that builds apps.
So how exactly does that work? We got machines building machines here.
Yeah, it's very sci-fi. No, it's actually, you know, we realize that, you know, event apps have become kind of a softer brand of Kleenex for a lot of people. It, you know, does it do all the things that I needed to do, you know, scheduling and social media and all that kind of basic stuff that replaces paper? And since apps are moving beyond just the replacement of paper now, we decided we could make it easy for people to build all the basics. Excuse me. Pardon me.
Are you right?
Let's try that one more time. I apologize for doing that, but I've got a nasty frog in my throat.
Oh, that's all right.
if we could get past all of the basics of what gets done to replace paper and allow people to do that themselves very quickly and easily, then we could move into the next generation where mobile apps are headed, which is, frankly, taking advantage of this discussion around big data.
All right, so that's a good lead-in to big data. For the folks at home who don't exactly understand what big data is, explain that, and why should meeting professionals care?
So big data sounds big.
Yeah.
You hear big data and you think NSA, Amazon, Netflix, Zappos, your favorite online retailer, and maybe your not-so-favorite government agency.
Right.
The best analogy that I could offer, though, is basically how Netflix and Amazon provide better customer delight by learning more about what each person likes or doesn't like. And, you know, big data really just starts with the digital trail of an individual person. Where it gets big is when we start looking at lots of people and start looking at demographic data and, you know, frankly, the depersonalized information. So it won't be so much, you know, what did you do at a specific event, but more what did your demographic do? What can we do to attract more of your demographic or your job title? What kinds of offerings and things like that? Again, like how Netflix and Amazon serve you up better information.
Right. So how does Busy Event fit into that?
Well, so we discovered, frankly, I mentioned the previous technology that we had because
right.
that was really where we learned about something that we like to call return on action. And so return on action is different than return on investment because ROI was something – so ROI is something that event owners have been after for years.
Right.
Return on investment in the digital age, though, is quite different from the one during the industrial age. So the term was initially coined – ROI was initially coined during the industrial age, and we're in the digital age. So, you know, that was back when Henry Ford was cranking out Model A cars. And so the return metric really needed an update. So we discovered, you know, through these previous generations of our technology, that when people take action on various digital elements, like a banner ad, a web or social media link, that can be a precursor to interest or for purchase, a pre-purchase indicator. So we can watch download traffic for digital brochures and presentations. Often that can be more meaningful than any survey that you would send out. And people today express their interest with their actions. And well beyond the few days of the event, this ROA can continue to be reported on, helping buyers and sellers connect even 6 or 9 months after the event, which is often when purchase decisions can continue to happen.
Okay, so within all that big data and information gathering and figuring out what the return is, what is your role within that process? You have a very interesting title. You have Chief Evangelist and Keeper of Calm. So what exactly are you doing on a day-to-day basis to achieve this overarching goal?
Well, so myself and my co-founder, Brian Slaywin, he and I have a collective of about 45 years of event experience. And age is frankly what helps you remain calm, is what I've discovered. You can't tell somebody who's young to calm down. You just have to learn that over time. And so, you know, our day-to-day role is to shape the vision of what we hear on a day-to-day basis from our clients. Our clients are the event producers and association managers. You know, these are folks, you know, in-house corporate planners that are doing dozens or hundreds of events a year. And so we've been working with these kinds of folks for a couple decades, and we've learned from them. We've learned what their risk tolerance is and what they care about. And, you know, my personal job is to make sure that our products, our services can deliver what they need to deliver in an easy fashion so that people can tap into these emerging technologies, the big data, the return on action, and ultimately profit.
Right.
It's a daily struggle, I guess is the best word for it, to strike a balance between what we think everybody wants and what the needs are of a specific, unique customer.
Well, because not all customers are built the same. They may have different needs. Explain to me what a typical client is for you guys, and then how they can kind of differ.
Well, so our typical client is not a one-off event. Traditionally, it has been, and that's where we kind of, you know, made our way over the years as a company. And we needed to do that in order to learn more and get that experience. That, you know, there's a lot of app companies out there that were not event companies. They're really smart web developers and design houses that are looking to you know, cash in on a lucrative industry, helping people convert paper to electronic. There's a lot of industries looking to do that. That's an automation of sorts. But, you know, but we're event people. We grew up in the event space. And what we learned was the event relationship is truly held by the event planner or the association management organization or the in-house corporate planner who knows the culture of the people, who knows the ins and outs of the events and what needs to be done. And it's far more intelligent for us as a company to serve the needs of the larger institution that's doing dozens or hundreds of events than to try to convince one event that not only do they need an app, but they need to use our app.
Right. Now, we go to a lot of trade shows, in particular myself, whether we're working there or just getting, you know, the lay of the land. And I see something happen pretty frequently. Either they have like a foam ball or an iPad raffle and everyone just throws their business card in, or they, you know, scan a barcode, and it seems kind of ineffective. Is this going away, or is this here to stay?
Well, we like to blog about this particular topic. I think I would answer your question with a question. So let's just take an example. Let's say you are a trade show vendor at one of these shows that you've talked about, rather than an attendee. And let's say that show has, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people at it. So as a vendor, which would you prefer for your investment of what's typically $20,000 or more to exhibit there? Would you rather get a list of 2,000 people who stopped by, took your free squeezy ball or tin of mints, and then really stuck it to you by taking your $5 color brochure to fake interest? Or would you rather have a list, I know it's a really loaded question, or would you rather have a list of 100 qualified and scored leads based on their actions inside a virtual trade show booth in the app?
I'd rather have the 100. It's less work for me, and it take longer to get to them through the 2,000 list, right?
Right. I mean, that's obviously, I say it's a loaded question. It's an industry problem. You're pointing it out in just the asking of your question, and I don't want to discount the fact that we might want the list of 2,000 people who stop by or frankly, the whole show list of 5,000, because both might be useful, but somebody's going to be needing to make phone calls on Monday after the show, and barcode scanners are good for shooting a list of adult trick-or-treaters and then bringing that list of names back to the marketing department. That no longer is the indicator of a successful show.
Well, that's the difference between the ROI and the ROA, right?
That's exactly it. This is what we're submitting to the industry, is that this is not an overnight change that's going to happen. Expo vendors are still going to demand their scanner of some sort, but until we get away from just coming up with better versions of scanning, whether that's near field or RFID or QR codes baked into something, we have to shift the relationship between the vendor and the attendee, much like, you know, if you were to surf the network for television shows, you've got 700 stations to choose from, and the programming that's on those stations is based on what a network thinks you want. But when you vote with your actions by choosing which stations you like and which programs you like, you know, the networks have gotten smart. They're watching and they're listening and they're changing their programming based on your actions. Why do we as an industry not learn from this? Is the big challenge. The attendee should be in control here. The attendee should be the one that has the scanner.
Right.
Because we want their actions. We want them to vote with their actions. We don't want to just reward them by putting something in their trick-or-treat bag and then faking interest. I mean, it's an expensive endeavor, and I agree with you. I want the 100 phone calls that I'm going to make on Monday to be queued up and ready to go, and I want those 100 people to be actually interested in talking to me.
Right. I mean, that cuts, and you don't want to call people who aren't interested. They don't want that. You don't want that. That's not good for anybody.
No one can afford that.
Right.
That's where drip marketing comes in. So
right.
There's plenty of great softwares out there that help with drip marketing, from, you know, Constant Contact to HubSpot, Marketo, even some smaller companies. And there is a place to go with that list of 5,000 attendees or 2,000 people who stop by your booth, but it isn't to make phone calls.
Right, right. Continuing with the value you guys provide, so a client comes to you and says, okay, I want to do this for my event. Where do you go from here? I mean, do you build the app specific to their event? Is it something they already use? And moving forward from that, is it something they pay for, or can they use it to generate some revenue?
Well, so in the example of the $20,000 booth, that booth typically spends, in addition to their booth fee, they'll spend between $500 and $1,000 on some type of lead management, a scanner, an app, or something,
sure.
Something separate. So in the busy event realm, we offer a software key called the data key, and that unlocks the return on action report around a session, a booth, a banner ad. A number of things inside the app can be unlocked so that the owner of that property, that booth or that session or whatever, can get access to the return on action reporting. So think about how LinkedIn works.
Right.
You get an alert that 65 people have looked at your profile in the last month, and if you want to know who's been looking, you pay to upgrade and unlock the data. So for us, that's the data key, and we charge $100 to unlock a report. And then the show can set a profit point from anywhere from $50 to $500 per key, pricing it in parity with what a barcode scanner rented for. But as we've already established, granted, you and I can agree on this very easily, that a data key is going to be smarter than a barcode scanner. But in this case, the show that sells even 100 data keys can create $50,000 worth of profit, and that's money that typically goes to a third-party vendor who rents the scanner. So a show has the ability to create $50,000 in revenue they've never seen before. So the question of who builds the app, how much does the app cost, how easy is it to build, all the other features, suddenly becomes a different discussion when you're talking about $50,000 in revenue that you've never seen before.
Sure, that's brilliant, because what it allows the event to do is to tap into a pocket of money that the exhibitors are already spending, right? So it's not like they have to convince them to spend more, it's just spend it on something different and smarter.
Yeah. I mean, this is where ROA turns into ROI
event. Right. So what's on the horizon for you guys? What's coming up?
Well, I think everybody's been talking about iBeacons or Bluetooth low emission, depending on how geeky you are.
Right.
And on the surface, I think this looks similar to RFID or near field. But what makes this emerging technology special is the low cost of the sensors themselves. That
right.
You know, in quantity, the sensors, as you might be aware, are maybe $15-$20 a piece. And your phone can even act as a beacon. And that's where I think all the app manufacturers are you know, lining up to take advantage of BLE technology of some sort. And even some of the venues are starting to investigate what would happen if they Bluetooth enabled their facilities. There's even some of the router manufacturers, some of the higher end, like, you know, Cisco and others, are building in indoor wayfinding type technologies into their next generation access points so that an additional technology doesn't actually have to be installed throughout the space. And so while that's kind of the geeky side of things, this whole Bluetooth layer of Wi-Fi that maybe didn't exist, you know, hasn't existed until maybe now, how it impacts the industry, and this is how we're looking at it, is how to reduce the number of times you have to look at your phone to find the information. So instead, the beacon network will nudge you about a meeting, about people, about preferred content as you naturally experience the event. So if there's, as an example, if you're in a room and it's time for a live poll in a session, your phone will already know and have that poll ready on your screen for you as opposed to you having to go dig it out of the app. Or if you've got a 10 a.m. appointment, maybe you're at a hosted buyer event and you're supposed to be somewhere at 10 a.m., your phone's going to know if you're where you're supposed to be or not, and then if you're not, help you get there on time.
Right. So where can folks go to learn more about you guys, get in touch with you, maybe become a client?
Busyevent.com. That's just the words busy and event.com. And you can actually build your own app in about 5 minutes.
That's cool.
Start playing. We got a nice little playground. Starts off at free, and it's fully featured. There's lots of videos. There's a great blog that gets a lot of reads. Just a lot of great content for people to learn about big data and kind of where things are headed.
Well, you guys are doing some great work, and we're glad we could have you on, David.
Hey, thanks for the time.
Next up on Meeting Pros, we have with us today Eric Olson, CEO and President of Zarista. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very, very well. So briefly for the folks at home, give us what you guys are doing for folks at Zarista.
Yeah, so Zarista is a communication and collaboration app for meetings and events. So we basically make it easier for everyone at an event to engage with what's most important to them. So, you know, for attendees, that could be people, could be content, could be solution providers. And then for marketers, obviously, that's getting in front of the top prospects.
So how do you achieve getting in front of top prospects? That's a big overarching goal for people who exhibitors or sponsors at events, right?
Sure, yeah, and it's kind of, you know, we've worked on both sides of it intentionally. You really have to do the event stuff well to create meaningful engagement in the app to then position sponsors and exhibitors in a place where they get more visibility. So the first key is really making sure that attendees are using the app. So we create a really deep, engaging environment where they can communicate, collaborate, sort of around the goals of the event. And then we use that to learn about them, right? To learn what their interests are, the things that they're there at the event to achieve. And then we strategically place sponsors in front of them. So use, you know, in-app advertising, targeted messaging, and things like that to drive traffic to the sponsors both on the app and then at the booth. And so we also connect lead generation with all of that. So when people are expressing interest in things that, you know, content that the sponsors have, or when they're coming by the booth, they can easily generate those leads and gather a bunch of good information about them and pass them back to their sales team.
So are you using, like, location-based services when attendees open the app, or are you kind of doing, like, iBeacon stuff, or how exactly are you gathering this data?
Yeah, so we, you know, so our app is a multi-device solution, unlike some of the other mobile-only solutions out there. So we actually start well ahead of some of the events on the web. So our web syncs up seamlessly with our native mobile apps. And so we start well out ahead of the event, allowing people to, you know, do all the things they want to do to plan for the event. So plan their schedule, start to build one-on-one meeting schedules, search through the sponsors, look at different content they have, And so, you know, even before the event, as people are expressing interest, so they, you know, say they want to, you know, add a sponsor or a piece of collateral to their list, then we're providing sponsors with some visibility on who's doing that so they can better target folks. And then at the event, yeah, we do use some location-based stuff to do location-based content. You know, obviously that's very new for the space, so still in its infancy. But we do provide some opportunities to do some location-based content. But we mainly use kind of the interest that people express during registration or in their profile to make some smart recommendations in the app. And then we use the communication tools to push out timely content to people in different segments to push them towards different pieces of content and different marketers.
Sure. So there are, like you said, there are a lot of different event apps out there in the world. How are you differentiating yourself in the marketplace?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting time for event apps. We're seeing a departure from kind of the initial event apps were either community sites or they were digital guides for events. And we're seeing, you know, a kind of a merger of those and just an evolution where the apps are not just kind of an application to support an event, almost a replacement for the guide. Rather, they are enhancing the event experience, so providing new types of content and things like that. So, you know, the ways that the things that we do a little bit different are the first one is we really have a focus on real-time content, right? To get people to come into the app and use it, that things need to be changing in the app. So instead of a static app, you know, one of the first things you notice about Zurista is we've got this dynamic homepage on the mobile app that brings people in with new content, you know, news from the show or broadcast messages from sponsors, and so sort of a content strategy throughout the event. The second thing is that, you know, like I said, we have one of the few multi-device solutions out there. So we're able to, with our website, address a whole different piece of the audience and a whole different pace of the event lifecycle to drive adoption before and after the event. And then probably our third biggest differentiator from a technology standpoint is our strength on integration. So we have over 130 out-of-the-box integrations, including both third-party systems, so everything from registration to CRMs, but also in-house systems. So, you know, as you know well, many event professionals are faced with the challenge of having some antiquated technology in-house, and we've been able to effectively pull a lot of different technologies, on average five different technologies for a major event, together to create a single window into an event. So that's been a real differentiator, as it kind of alleviates a lot of the stress on the planner, but also makes it for the attendee a lot easier to engage with a lot of different things that used to require going to different systems.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stress on planners to up the value for the attendees at events, but also for the sponsors, and that's a hard balance for them. What are some common misconceptions or mistakes they're making when it comes to selecting an app for their event?
The sponsors or the
oh, for the event planner, yeah.
Yeah. So the biggest mistake I think planners make is that they jump right into features and functionality before really trying to understand the experience they want to create. So, you know, one of the things we're really seeing in the event app space is some apps. There are certain apps that are better for certain situations. So, for example, an app that for a small corporate meeting, an incentive trip, is very different than an app for a major trade show. And so what we do is we work with the planners very early on in the process to have them answer some of the key questions about what they want to get out of the app, right? So, you know, starting with attendees, how do attendees want to network with the app? Do they come there to meet people they already know, or do they come there to meet new people, things like that? Asking a lot of good questions up front to really start, before we even get into the features and functionality, really lay out the experience, which starts with answers to those questions and then gets into creating user stories. So a user story example is, as an attendee, I want to find the most interesting sessions based on my favorite authors, because that helps me to advance my career, right? So that's kind of a scientific event example. So by understanding those little user stories that build up to the app experience you want to create, we can see if our app is a good fit or if another app's a good fit, and also focus on the right types of functionality within the app. I think one thing you're seeing right now is that event apps are getting very, very deep in functionality. And so it's really important to prioritize the different things that you want to really highlight or really improve at your event, and then allow, you know, first, select an app based on that, and second, build the app experience around those stories.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise out there, and we've been talking about this, you know, the whole segment here, especially when it comes to functionality and bells and whistles and what all do I want my app to do, but it's got to be strategic. And is that something that you kind of help out when an event planner comes to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're very big on that, and that, you know, I say over and over and over again that, you know, an app, it shouldn't be looking for an app to support the event. It should be looking to improve the event with technology. And that's a subtle difference, but it's a very important one, in that the event apps today really open up new things for events, right? New ways for people to collaborate, new ways for people to engage with different content. You know, so for example, we're doing an event where posters is a big piece of the event. And so when people are walking around looking at these installations, basically, there's also content on the app where they that augments that. So they're looking at the poster, but they're also looking at images that support it on the app or a video. So it's really people are starting to use the app as a second screen for communication,
right?
Content, collaboration. And so that's really kind of the next phase of this, is moving from an app just supporting an event to looking at an app as part of the meeting design.
So is this becoming more of a trend? Is the app adoption going up? Is it going down? Or how is this being received?
Yeah, it's interesting. Over the last year, really, we've seen app adoption really take off, both from organizers. You know, there was a study that came out at the end of last year that said that there was 29%, I believe, of event organizers were using apps either occasionally or always, and they predicted that number is going to reach over 40% this year, which is a pretty startling growth curve for a technology. And that's really being driven not just because, you know, people think they need an app for a show, but because people are starting to see the results and the impact of those apps. So the same study said that there was, you know, 33% increase in engagement. I think there was about a 10% decrease in print costs. So those are really meaningful numbers for a planner. And then because the quality of the app and the actual value proposition of using the app is getting so much better, we're seeing the adoption rates go up. So, you know, it used to be for a first event that, you know, 40-50%, you know, pretty good for a large event. But now we're seeing crazy numbers, 80, 90, and we
wow.
had one event that was 99% adoption. So planners that are really doing this stuff well are seeing just tremendous results now.
So what do you say to a planner who wants to use an app, but maybe her attendees aren't tech friendly, maybe they're a little bit old school? How do you incorporate them when you build an app?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it comes back to kind of being strategic in your approach, right, and making sure that you're looking at what are the things that technology can improve for this audience, right? So the first thing that we like to do is actually pull the audience and ask a simple question of what websites and applications do you use on a weekly basis? And you can glean a ton of information from that on the types of things. Are they using content apps? Are they, you know, using social networks? Even in older audiences, people are often surprised by the types of things that people are using. And then we really focus on creating the right experience for that audience. So we have some apps that get, you know, 80, I think we have one app that's a much older association audience. They have about 82% adoption. And the big thing for them is the session presentations being on the app, right? So that very simple thing they found was really, really important to their audience, to be able to get access to those in real time and be able to share those, download those, email those. Was a huge value proposition, and they used that as kind of a gateway to drive people in, and then started to continuously add to that to get people comfortable with it. The second part is you can't really underestimate the importance of having a web component to what you do for older audiences, right? We found that there's a real fear factor about having to download an app for some of these folks, but when they realize there's a website where they can get all that same information, it completely takes that fear away,
right?
And really drives adoption up.
Right, cause it's really just the fear of an unknown entity or you know, technology that they're not familiar with. So yeah, having that online presence, that's a good way to kind of wean them into it, right?
Absolutely.
So another thing I keep hearing a lot about, especially in the event arena and from especially from an app standpoint, is this trend towards big data and personalizing some things for attendees and also getting information for sponsors. How does that work within Zurista?
Yeah, big data is obviously the hot topic lately, right? Kind of everywhere, and it's broadly applied, I think, and it's sort of a broad term. But that's kind of where the sort of the next phase of event apps are going to be very data driven. So Zurista is always focused. Our heritage is really comes from driving engaged communities around events. So we started a few years ago on the web before mobile was a big thing. And so we've always been focused on creating personalized experience using data that people express about themselves. And that started with expressed interest. So things that they said they wanted to do or things they said that they wanted to see. But now it's moving to using the data points both from within the app, from within registration, and external data points to hyper-personalize that experience for folks. So based on the sessions that I attend and the people that I profiles that I view, being able to make smart recommendations a la Amazon.com of the things that I might be interested in the event. So that's a concept that I call customer-centric events. And so it really the whole idea is using behavioral data to custom tailor the event experience around people. And I think that's kind of the future of what event apps can really unlock, is that events have traditionally been very noisy. I know myself, I go into an event with a list of people I want to meet, sessions I want to go to, and maybe I get to 20 and 30% of that
right.
Sometimes because I get distracted. And so, you know, really the value of an app, or one of the big values of an app, is being able to hyper-personalize that, be able to sift through, and you know, some of the events we work with have thousands of sessions, being able to sift through easily all of that content and get to the stuff that is most valuable to me as an individual.
So what is the coolest thing that you guys are doing with Zurista? What's the coolest feature you've rolled out for a client?
Oh, wow, that's a good question, because it seems like there's something cool coming out every week. Yeah, I think one of the most interesting ones, I guess, has been the dynamic home screen, right? So for a long time, event apps were very static. It was, you know, you hit the app and you have a list of icons of things I want to do. And one of the things that always frustrated me about that was I had to dig a layer down to get into the content. And there's plenty of studies that show the reason that you check an app, and I'm not sure what apps you look at every day, but things like LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, the reason you check it is you get sort of a dopamine response in your brain that's the same that you get from pulling the handle on a slot machine. So in a slot machine, you're kind of looking for some win, some result,
right.
Potentially money, right? In an app, it's essentially looking to hit the information jackpot. And so by creating this living, breathing, dynamic home screen, we allow event apps to really make content the hero. And so we allow the event organizer to customize that. And so for, you know, an event like, for example, Bio, which is the largest biotech event in the world, the kind of the crux of their event for most people is these partnering meetings where companies meet with companies. And so we were able to pull their meeting schedule onto the front of that app, so that every time they pull up the app, they're seeing what's coming up next. We knew that some events are very news-focused, so what's happening at the event, what's on next, messages and things like that. So really making it dynamic to pull people in instead of asking them to sift through it like they might do in a book.
That's really interesting. I never thought about it that way, but it makes a lot of sense, especially with the dopamine release. That's cool. That's a cool information to have in your back pocket there when you go to package this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think, you know, planners are finally starting to get that. Like I said, it's going from kind of an app as a replacement to a guide to really thinking of the app as a way to expand the design of the meeting. So to start pushing content out to people. And actually one of the more interesting trends we're seeing and kind of a cool thing we've been working on lately is moving from single event apps to events that or to apps that actually span the year. And I think one of the biggest revelations for meeting professionals and particularly the marketing groups in the organizations we work with is that the event app is a really powerful mechanism for engaging people, getting them into an application, getting it on their phone, and then by rolling it up and having a single app for the organization that also contains a persistent content app, they're actually able to drive more engagement with content year-round. They always struggled to get people to download these apps that might have their newsletter, their magazine, some news updates, because there's not quite enough value there, but they get the app on the phone with the event and then are able to push content out year-round, drive networking with their membership base or segments of their customer base. And so we're seeing this move from looking at it as a pure event app to looking at events as a tool to drive engagement with content marketing across the whole span of the year.
So what's on the horizon for the industry and for Zurista in particular?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question on the industry. I think it's defining itself. I think the big thing, to maybe just keep it at a high level is that you've seen events really focus on getting the different pieces of that are specific to the event process really dialed in on apps. And I think the next phase is what we talked about a little bit earlier, making the apps smarter. Right. So instead of having it be driven by the attendee and forcing them to filter and sift through things, actually making smart recommendations based on their behaviors like we talked about, but also based on where I am, like you mentioned location-based, using location and behavioral data to just make the apps more personalized and smarter, I think is the big thing that you're going to see kind of across the industry.
So where can folks go learn more about you, get in contact with Zurista, maybe hire you guys for some work?
Yeah, you can check us out on Zurista.com. It's our website, and sign up for a demo there. We've got a couple videos you can watch, or give us a call, and we're happy to take you through, show you some of the client projects we've worked on. We're one of the big things that I'm super passionate about is that to effectively sell and provide technology for the meetings and events industry, you need people who have been there, done that, and to some extent felt that pain.
Yeah.
And so, we've built a team of folks that have been in the meetings and events industry generally for many, many years. And so we've got folks that are really willing to jump in, make suggestions, and help out. We really believe by kind of pushing this piece of the industry forward, it benefits us and everybody else. And so, even if it's, I'm thinking about doing an app and I have so many questions, we're happy to help you kind of think through that, show you some examples, give you some case studies, and really provide some visibility into what's exactly working out there.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Eric.
Great. Thanks for the time.
No problem. Last up today on Meeting Pros, we have with us Lisa Kielty with PMC Squared. How are you doing, Lisa?
I'm great, thank you.
Okay, so real quick, if you could just let us know what PMC Squared is all about and what you guys do on a day-in, day-out basis.
Sure. Well, there's never really the same day twice, which is nice.
That is nice.
But our services and capabilities are servicing the life sciences industry and the vendors that support them when interacting with physicians. So we help with meeting management. We help with standard operating procedures, process improvement. We help with audit, being ready for audit, building audit into your processes so that, when it comes time for an audit, you're ready. And then also we advise and keep pharmaceutical companies or life sciences companies and meeting managers abreast with the latest and greatest regulatory requirements.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's some very specific and very serious challenges that pharmaceuticals and life sciences companies have. What are a few of those? And you mentioned auditing. Explain what that means and how dangerous it is.
Sure. Well, there's many different types of audits that occur, and they occur throughout different industry sectors: financial, insurance, pharmaceutical. So the different types of audits, I won't go through them all, but internal audit typically the employees or the department of, say, compliance or audit will audit within a certain department of a life sciences company to find out if their practices are, you know, legitimate, if they're ethical. And so when we work with meeting managers or procurement or folks within the life sciences industry, we're making sure we focus in on the interactions that that company has with a physician, with a clinical research professional, or what is now called a healthcare professional. So that could be a nurse practitioner, it could be a physician, again, a clinical researcher. And basically what we're doing is showing a trail, a consistent trail and rationale as to why that life sciences company is engaging that physician to either do work on a clinical trial or to speak on their behalf, et cetera, and then have that common thread for that rationale be throughout the complete process of paying them, you know, an honoraria, flying them to a meeting, flying them home, all around the right agenda. So making sure that ethical practices are being followed, that standard operating procedures are being withheld within the company. And then, of course, there's another audit, a type of audit, which is done by the Office of Inspector General, which is the government. And those are much more serious and take much more time. But basically, having good records, keeping accurate, and being proactive of your record keeping is critical when trying to prepare and being ready for an audit, whether it be internal or OIG.
So a typical client for you would be like a pharmaceutical company or a life sciences company or some medical device company, and they hire you to keep them abreast on all the policy changes the government implies and help them avoid these pitfalls, right?
Exactly. So we at PMC Squared, we have three sort of tiers of clients. Our life sciences clients are definitely pharmaceutical and biotech. We do a lot with, you know, medium-sized to larger companies, but we're also looking at a lot of companies now, biotech, that are just commercializing where they have a drug or a device or something that has been approved by the FDA, and they're just starting to get their salespeople involved or build their sales force, and that's when they really need to look out to what these laws are. And then we also work with meeting management agencies because there are many times the agents, if you will, acting on behalf of the pharma companies, engaging physicians. So they need to be very tightly connected to the laws and other requirements and make sure that they uphold their clients' SOPs.
Right. Well, let's just say I'm a pharma rep, or I have a new medical device, and I want a doctor to start using my product for their patients because I know it'll help. Can I just like give them a sample?
You know, there's different laws and guidelines around samples, and there has to be, you know, some education around it. There has to even certain devices that you give, like let's say a laptop. You give the physician a laptop to use because it has the latest and greatest software about such and such device. There has to be an educational need, and there's also a framework of time put around how long that sample or device sample can be used by the physician. So samples are very, very different, and they're very unique in their own right. When working, once a drug or a device is approved, it becomes very critical in terms of compliance with anti-kickback laws and false payments and false claims. And there's a whole bunch of things that occur once a drug and device is approved and used now to the public. There are also other guidelines and regulatory requirements for drugs and devices that are still in development. So it's a very muddy water in which we deal with, and that's why I say there's never the same day twice. But what we do when working with clients is we identify what they're trying to do, or unfortunately sometimes what they've done, and we have to clean up what they've done and
right.
Show them how to correct it for future.
So how does the Sunshine Act tie in with this?
So the Sunshine Act is now called Open Payments. And the Sunshine Act came about in 2008 through Senator Gracely and Charles Cole. And basically, it's an act that talks about transparency, disclosing a financial transaction that takes place between a healthcare professional and a manufacturer or group purchasing organization. manufacturer would be a life sciences organization, such as a medical device company, a pharmaceutical company, biotech, et cetera. So the purpose is really identifying, like I said, or disclosing that interaction, that financial transaction. Could be anywhere from $10 or more, or $100 on the aggregate per year. So if, let's say, you're a physician and you're coming to a training for a clinical trial, or you're coming to a meeting that I'm holding about, you know, XYZ drug, and I pay for your travel, I pay for your lunch, I pay for your overnight accommodation, all of that financial or transfer of value information has to be disclosed within a certain time frame to the government. And who's in charge of that? The government now is Center for Medicaid, Medicare Services. And it's a big, big deal. It's a big deal. Open payment is a big deal.
How is this impacting your clients?
You know, large and small companies, you know, many of the larger companies like the Bristol-Myers, Pfizer's, et cetera, you know, they've been ready for a long, long time in terms of, you know, identifying where they need to be, buying various applications or technologies to help track these payments. You know, some of the smaller companies have been struggling with, you know, trying to get ahead of where they need to be and what's the best approach. But the greatest impact came really when, you know, we didn't know what the full guidelines were going to be. The government took its sweet time saying, you know, putting that stake in the ground to say, okay, look, this is what you need to report. This is when you need to report it. And, you know, this is how you're going to do it. There are definite timeframes now in place that companies and meeting management agencies need to be aware of. They're all on the CMS.gov website for anybody that wants to look. Open payments, also you could search that on Google, and there's just a gazillion different links to that. You know, we help people identify what those requirements are, put timelines in place, and then we also prioritize all that.
All right, I want to shift gears here for a second and kind of dive a little bit more into meetings and trade shows, in, specifically for your clients. But how does all this translate to planning a meeting for an association or even an exhibitor planning on being at an event?
In terms of open payments and Sunshine?
Yeah, well, even PMC Square's role in planning all that with all the regulations the government, you know, provides.
Oh, gosh. Well, and that's just it. You know, my background, I was with Pfizer for 10 years back in 2000 to 2010. And, you know, all of these various regulatory requirements started coming out around 2003. Pharma code, and then, you know, interacting with physicians, being ethical, et cetera, et cetera. So really having that understanding, the very basic of what it is you can and can't do before you do anything, you've got to know that. So with the Sunshine Act, you need to know exactly what data you have to gather prior to doing anything because, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So, you know, identifying exactly who your attendants are, where are they coming from. There are state laws around financial transparency and disclosure, as well as federal. And now there's also global requirements. Certain countries are requiring, just like the U.S., to disclose financial transactions within their country. So, you know, getting very much in front of, you know, what do I need to know? What can I do? What can I do? And what do I need to report and when? All up front.
Right.
Well,
so
before you even...
Right. So how does PMC Squared, what level of involvement do you have when a client of yours says, hey, I'm doing this trade show, what do I do?
Okay. So we do not plan, PMC Squared doesn't plan any meetings at all,
sure,
with the exception of advisory committee meetings. We've been asked by many of our clients from years ago to help them present to the FDA because that's a very unique skill and a unique project. But anyway, what we do, and we do it consistently, is to give the companies a building block from which they can use every time their clients ask to plan a meeting. So let's say you have ABC Meeting Management Agency and you have XYZ Pharma Company. That ABC planning agency has to have processes and systems in place well ahead of the phone call. And so when that sponsor or that pharma company calls and says, I want to plan a trade show, I want to plan, you know, a meeting or whatever it is, they need to know exactly what information they must gather from them. Like I said, where are your attendees coming from? If it's a global group of attendees, you've got a whole bunch of other parameters that they have to look at. So we give them and build processes that are manageable customizable, workable, and that aren't overburdened with process to be able to use them on a day-to-day and meeting-type basis.
Right. So I'm a little confused. So do you provide that structure for the meeting planner companies, and then that serves the pharmaceutical world?
Exactly. So if a pharmaceutical company works with a meeting management agency, typically, you know, they'll do more than just one meeting. You know, you're dealing with many companies that have master services agreements, and these meeting planning agencies are with these companies 2 to 3 years straight. So when I'm working with, you know, XYZ agency, I need to understand who their clients are,
sure,
meaning from the pharma side. And if they tell me what they are, together we bridge the gap between the two, saying, okay, you know, let's come together and let's build a process that works for your clients.
Has it ever occurred that one of their clients is actually one of your clients?
You know, it hasn't, actually. I mean, we've been very transparent, and
sure,
what we do is, like I said, we identify what the gaps are, and we close the gap. So, you know, let's just say, for example, we worked with Bristol Myers on a global project. Did I know many of the meeting planners that worked for Bristol Myers and with American Express? Yes, I did. But so it doesn't really overlap. They kind of all fit in to different places and points,
sure,
but we don't step on each other's toes.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. So what is on the horizon for PMC Squared?
So actually, we just rolled out, in working with Trifecta Clinical, we rolled out some open payments training for various pharmaceutical companies. So we found, and many people understood this, understood this as well, that physicians and clinical researchers had no idea that open payments was, you know, happening. And March 31st was the beginning of the reporting and the data gathering. So we put together a training just to say, hey, physicians, hey, clinical researchers, you know that data is going to be collected on you, and what's been, you know, exchanged in terms of value is going to be reported. So we did a very broad training. It's a virtual training. We also are catering it to, or customizing it to, companies. So let's say, again, ABC Pharma Company wants to build their requirements and their particulars into how they're going to collect data and what they want from a physician. We have all of that training done virtually. So the physicians and other clients that pharmas work with, other physicians, know exactly what's expected of them.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, you know what? I mean, it's like the old thing where, you know, you produce all this reading material, nobody reads it. You
right.
know, this is a, you know, a virtual, they click on it, they listen to it, they get the credit for obviously training. And then, of course, it helps protect the physician, but it also helps protect the pharma company to say, hey, this has been communicated.
So where can folks go to learn more about PMC Squared, get in touch with you guys?
Sure. So we have our website. It's www.pmcsq.com, pmcsq.com. And then there's also my email, which is Lisa Kelty, K-E-I-L-T-Y, at pmcsq.com. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lisa Kelty. And, you know, I'm very good at responding to questions. I get a lot of, you know, hey, what about this? Or, hey, I've got this situation. What do you advise? So, yeah, anybody can email me or connect through LinkedIn with me for sure.
Well, Lisa, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And I'm sure the listeners out there are just, you know, thrilled to have that knowledge.
My pleasure. My pleasure. There's a lot to it, and staying ahead of it is definitely a full-time job, but that's what we're here for.
Well, again, I appreciate it, and we'll hopefully get you on again.
Thank you so much.
All right, I'm Michael Lauer. That's all the time we have for today on Meeting Pros. We'll catch you next time. Take care.